You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 18th of October 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at the long-awaited and recently signed off Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. We explore the significance of this trade agreement through its long genesis to recent breakthrough. We'll consider its meaning for the Obama administration, its wider economic significance, and assess the role that the signatories, and those left on the margins, might play in shaping its future impact. We start with Paul Donovan, global economist at UBS, who explains what the TPP represents and why this is an important moment.
TPP is a preferential trade agreement. That means that it becomes a lot easier, a lot cheaper to do trade if you are one of the signatories of the TPP, easier to do trade with other members. But it's preferential and in fact imposes a barrier against doing trade if you are not part of the TPP because you don't have the advantage of the lower tariffs, you don't have the advantage of the free trade deal, and so therefore it's a preferential trade deal. It prefers some countries, but by extension does not prefer trade with others.
Ian Bremmer is the president and founder of Eurasia Group. What does he make of the meaning of this much-anticipated moment?
It's actually aligning both trade and standards with U.S. preferences. You know, globalization is persisting around the world, trade and capital moving faster and faster across borders, but Americanization is not because of the rise of emerging markets, the weakening of the transatlantic relationship, and the rise of China. And so the United States, if the U.S. wants to persist as having not only the world's largest economy for as long as possible, but also having the standards, the currency, the accounting standards, the internet, that other countries align themselves with of enormous importance for the profitability of U.S. multinationals and the strength of the U.S. economy, they have to build stronger and more durable trade ties with countries that are aligned with them. The Trans-Pacific Partnership will do that with 40% of the world's economy. And many of those economies in Asia growing pretty significantly, and Japan, the world's third largest economy. The reason this is particularly important is because China, which is on the track to become the largest economy from the United States, doesn't want to be left on the sidelines. So ultimately, just like when the U.S. created the World Trade Organization that China was not a part of and they wanted to join it, the Chinese will eventually want to align themselves with the U.S.-created Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's actually a very important strategic deal, even though there are both plus sides and downsides on the pure economics of it for the near term.
And Adrian Zurker, UBS head of asset allocation for APAC, shares his insights into TPP's wider significance.
I think the TPP may really reshape the globalization map going forward. I mean, it really aims at creating a free trade bloc with common labors and environmental standards and cover issues of trade, investments and intellectual property rights.
Adrian Zurker. Let's turn next to the TPP's significance for some of its signatories. Alicia Ogawa is an adjunct faculty at the School for International and Public Affairs at Columbia, also associated with a research institute at the Center on Japanese Economy and Business at Columbia Business School. She spoke to us from Tokyo to explain the importance of the TPP from a Japanese perspective.
The first thing to say is I think that the Japanese were pleasantly surprised that it got wound up, on time as it did. I think there was a fear that it would drag on and on and on. But, as for the importance to Japan, there is, in a sense, there's not much really in the short term that makes any economic impact. It's more important as a symbolic kind of set of goals, which is not to say that that symbol is not important. It's very important. But it gives the prime minister the ability to say, we are capable of change, we have a plan for change, and we're going to change.
There are several important narratives when it comes to Japan, particularly concerned that China is not a signatory. But, explains Adrian Zurker, rather than worry about China, there should be a greater focus on Shinzo Abe's so-called third arrow.
I think for Japan it will be interesting because it really means that we will probably see that 95% of the tariffs will be eliminated. And that really puts pressure on Abenomics to sharpen their third arrow. So they have to accelerate the reform agenda. They have to make some sectors, like the agricultural sectors, more efficient, more productive. And that's putting pressure, so it could really speed up the whole reform plan for Japan. So it's, in this sense, a positive sign. And we also will probably see that Japan will start to export some of its production facilities to Vietnam, to Malaysia, and probably start to get benefits of cheaper labours.
And what does the TPP's progression mean for the US in particular? There's a lot of political discussion, agrees Paul Donovan, but what's the bigger strategic picture?
Well, I think as far as the United States is concerned, this has to be seen as part of a bigger strategic issue, what we at UBS call the patroeconomics. That is to say that the US and Japan are seeking to maintain their influence in the Asian region against a rising China. And that's economic influence, but also political influence. So what TPP does is sort of bolster US economic and political power within the Asian region. China, of course, is not part of the TPP, and that may well be a deliberate decision.
And let's switch back now to Adrian Zurka again for a look in more detail at the implications in terms of Asia assets.
The TPP is really the biggest trade deal in generation, and it's affecting 40% of the global economy, has been signed by 12 nations. If I look at Asia, I think the biggest winners are really Vietnam and Malaysia. But there are, of course, some countries that have been left out. And the losers are probably Thailand and, in particular, China, which could be one of the big losers.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at what the TPP represents for the US in foreign policy terms. Plus, we'll consider the narrative provided by the countries who did not sign up to the agreement. When it comes to deals of this type, is who doesn't sign up as, or even more important, than who does? What about China's absence? Paul Donovan again.
China now is at a disadvantage compared to the other partners of TPP because, of course, China still has the existing tariffs and existing restrictions on trade, whereas TPP members are reducing those restrictions. So that means that if you are a TPP member, like, for example, the United States, and trying to decide whether you wish to purchase goods from China or from, let us say, Malaysia, you now have an additional incentive to purchase goods from Malaysia because they will be subject to less tariff and less restriction. So it's, in one sense, an anti-China piece of legislation. And I think we have to see TPP in the broader geopolitical context that, you know, China was not invited to participate or wasn't encouraged to participate, partly because this is other countries clustering around the leadership of the US and to a lesser extent Japan.
And where does Adrian Zurka think this will go?
China joined the WTO back in 2001 and has really reshaped the way China is doing business, the way China is doing trades. Now going forward, the TPP initiative may push processing trade shares further down. Firms can only enjoy the benefit of TPP if it follows the requirement of the rules of origins. So this really implies that more production change could be built within TPP countries. And as China's labor costs may continue to rise, many companies would relocate their assembly lines from China to TPP emerging countries.
How does Alicia Ogawa summarize the Japanese view on China's absence? After all, we've somewhat surprisingly heard Shinzo Abe lament their non-participation.
It was really quite surprising that Abe came out and, you know, said in almost very direct way that it would have been a good idea to include China. And I think part of that stems from the slight regrets that come out of what transpired with the new development bank that China is sponsoring, the AIIB, and the idea that neither Japan nor the United States elected to participate in that exercise. And I think there is quite a bit of admission on the U.S. side that that was a mistake. And so I think this sort of regret that China is not involved in TPP is an outgrowth of that. And finally, it certainly bears stressing that Japan and China are at a very delicate stage in their relationship now, very delicate. I'm here in Tokyo for the last week, and I'll be here a couple of more weeks, and it really is kind of a major concern of everybody, given the ramp up of security issues. You know, it's seen as really kind of crucial that Japan and China get this relationship straight, and there's not a lot of confidence that there's a lot to work with right now.
Next, we look at the TPP agreement from a policy viewpoint. Is this the key positive foreign policy legacy for the Obama administration? Ian Bremmer certainly thinks so.
It's definitely the most important positive foreign policy legacy for Obama. There are a lot of negative ones, but he has had other things that have gone well. Certainly the Cuba breakthrough, which should have happened over the last decades. No one else did it. The Iran deal, which is going to bring a lot more oil on the market, and the international community, the U.S. actually led them to get sanctions to force the Iranians to the table and made that deal happen. But the TPP is a bigger deal, and it's a bigger deal because it is America's principal allies in both the Western Hemisphere and also in the Pacific, basically coordinating to align their economies together vis-a-vis the most important strategic challenger to the United States and the world, China. And China's, as you know, it's not a democracy. It's authoritarian. It's not a free market economy. It's state capitalist. And left unchecked, China's ability to use its economic and political weight to get countries to move away from U.S. standards and preferences and how the economy functions would be much greater. In fact, the Chinese are spending an awful lot of money to achieve precisely that. The best way for the Americans to counter that is not to contain the Chinese. It's instead to build more durable, lasting, and deeper trade integration so that more money ultimately flows more efficiently among the economies that the Americans are more deeply aligned with. And ultimately, when the TPP was first announced by the Americans, the Chinese said, we don't like it, we want nothing to do with it. Today, Chinese leaders are saying, well, wow, this thing's in place. We need to ultimately see how we will join. That is a huge win for the United States. And again, in a foreign policy environment where there have been a lot of losses.
A key foreign policy win for the Obama administration? Well, it is of modest significance, says Paul Donovan. He says that instead the TTIP, a potential transatlantic trade agreement, will be more important, if it ever advances.
I think that TPP is moderately significant. I wouldn't say it's a central part of the Obama legacy. TTIP is far more far-reaching in terms of its implications. And I think TTIP, if it were to be advanced under Obama, would be a more significant legacy. TPP is like many other trade deals that we've had in the past, primarily tariffs, primarily preferential. It has some important implications for foreign policy, but I wouldn't say it's the most important part of the Obama legacy.
So let's keep looking further ahead to this potential TTIP. Could it come into force? Could it even render the TPP obsolete? What does Ian Bremmer think?
Certainly the fact that the TPP has gotten done does provide some momentum for a transatlantic deal. The problem is that it's much harder to get the Europeans to focus on a big strategic trade deal given the extraordinary challenges that Europe presently faces. Just in determining the future of the EU and the Eurozone, not to mention the responses to the refugee crisis and the geopolitical challenges that abound in the region. So not a surprise that you got the Trans-Pacific deal done first, the part of the world where allies are really looking for a lot more America, not less. Yeah, I absolutely agree that the TTIP is something that both sides should try to achieve, but we're very far off at this point.
Comparing the TPP to a transatlantic trade agreement, Adrian Zurka thinks the TPP is probably more actionable, at least in the short term.
I would probably say it's a complementary to what we have, so it's definitely on a bigger magnitude, bigger scale, but the TPP is probably more actionable in the short term and could probably be more impactful for some of the Asian countries, as already mentioned, Vietnam, Malaysia, that could benefit most of that.
Looking at things from a European perspective, Paul Donovan repeats his belief that a transatlantic agreement has the potential, if agreed, to render the TPP obsolete. Why?
The TPP is essentially a good old-fashioned trade deal. Reducing tariffs is the main raison d'etre of the TPP. TTIP, which is the transatlantic deal, is very different in its scope, and if it ever comes to pass, is potentially quite revolutionary. Because what TTIP aims to do is not to reduce tariffs. There aren't that many tariffs between the EU and the US. What TTIP aims to do is to reduce regulatory barriers to trade and create common regulation, not just for trade, but right across the economies of the US and the European Union. If you create a common regulatory environment, that means that you reduce a lot of the barriers to trade. You don't have to go through two different sets of legal procedures or regulations in order to sell product. But it also means, of course, that if you want to sell product into the United States or Europe, you will have to satisfy the regulatory standards that are set by Washington and Brussels acting together. And that means ultimately that the rules of global trade would be dictated by Washington and Brussels acting in concert. And even signatories of TPP would basically have to follow the rules of TTIP if they wanted to do trade with what would be the largest and most important economic bloc in the world.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 54th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.